Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing, always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/true-transparency-pricing. Happy you'll be, or the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
Every Wednesday, right around this time, we're joined by Greg Cosell from NFL Films. We've got him for the next couple segments. Greg, how are you this week?
Chad, how's it going?
Going well. You looking forward to all these preseason games?
Oh, he loves them.
It's my favorite thing, especially so we can make definitive statements about these players, you know, particularly rookies.
12 snaps.
There you go.
Titans brought in Brandon Chubb yesterday. Just wondering if and what you know about him, and if you think he's got any potential to help them.
Very little, to be honest with you, because I did not watch him coming out of Wake Forest, so I really don't know that much about him. Where do they stand as far as they're concerned, Paul, because you're there, I bet, on their linebacker position?
I think they probably brought him in at the Nate Palmer spot. And Nate Palmer suffered a season-ending injury. We don't know what, but he's on on injured reserve now. So,
maybe. He's a roster spot guy.
Yeah.
I mean, theoretically, if he were to make it, he'd play special teams. My guess is he wasn't brought in to really compete for meaningful snaps.
On the Titans front, we have not delved very deeply into Dean Pease.
Yep.
A lot of people talk about how what they're going to do is not drastically different than what they did under Dick LeBeau. But obviously, he's got some hallmarks to what he does based on successful tenures in New England and in Baltimore. And it sounds like you do think that that he will be different than Dick LeBeau. So let's start there.
I mean, I think there'll be some meaningful differences. And I think Dean Pease is one of those coaches that's not a well-known name, but has had a lot of success in this league. And I think if you look at his defenses over the years, for whatever it's worth, they're rated highly in terms of yards given up. So people can look at the stats any way they want, but he's done very well in this league. I remember going back to 1990, I think it was, when Nick Saban got the head coaching job at Toledo, Dean Pease was his first defensive coordinator. So Dean Pease goes back a long way. But I think one thing, there's a number of things that specific coaches tactically that they do. I think what you'll see a lot of is what we call those double mug fronts, where you have linebackers up in both of the A gaps. Now, sometimes what Dean does, and I think it's really good, is they don't have to be linebackers. He might put a defensive lineman there, and he might have a linebacker or a safety in a B gap. He moves around a lot. There's a lot of multiplicity with his use of personnel and with pressures and coverages from that sort of double A gap look. And that's why linebackers are so, so important in his defense. C.J. Mosley in Baltimore was a really good example of that.
Let's stick on that linebacker front. Rashawn Evans disappeared from maybe the fourth practice of camp and has not been seen since. We don't know the specifics of what's going on with him, but that leaves them in a position where, for the time being at least, that second inside linebacker that looks to be a combination of Will Compton and Jayon Brown. How would they fit into this piece stuff?
Evans is critical here, and assuming the injury's not serious, he will get back, but there'll be a learning curve, clearly, because he's really athletic. I think of the two names you mentioned, Jayon Brown is clearly the more athletic mover than Will Compton. Compton has more experience and probably understands things better, but his somewhat athletic limitations might limit the kinds of things that Dean Pease might want to do regarding those fronts. Now, a couple of other things you can expect to see from Dean Pease, I think. He likes to blitz off the slot, the star blitz, as we call it. He really likes interchangeable safeties. That's something that I think has been a part of his career, and I think in an ideal world, I think that the Titans can do that. I think they will have safeties who can move around and be multidimensional in the way that they play. And he plays a lot of dime. So you go, you look at Baltimore, they played almost as many snaps of dime with six defensive backs as they did with nickel with five defensive backs. So there's a lot of multiplicity to what Dean Pease does.
You, Kenny Vaccaro, obviously, we talked to you after you were on with us last week, but you liked him the best, or thought he was the most versatile out of the bunch of guys that they were bringing through.
Without question.
How do you see him fitting? And it certainly seems like, he was asked to be in the box a lot in New Orleans, but maybe he wasn't asked to do the things that he's best at in New Orleans.
Well, you go back to last year in New Orleans before he got hurt. He was essentially their slot corner when they went to their sub packages. So he was lining up man to man on wide receivers. Now he's a really good athlete. If he still has it, and again, you know, we don't know what his situation is. You never know when guys are on the street and then brought in and the reason for that. But assuming that he still can play at a reasonably high level, you could have Vaccaro and Byard at safety, and you have two interchangeable players with multidimensional skill sets. And I think that's the kind of thing that Dean Pease would love. Now, obviously, this is a defense that takes some time to learn. Vaccaro has not been in this particular defense, so we'll see how that all plays out. But if you just look on paper and you look at Byard and Vaccaro, they could be a really nice safety duo within the context of Dean Pease defense.
Is it conceivable that they'd be better with Vaccaro than with Cyprian?
Yes, just because Vaccaro can do more things. And I think he's better in coverage. He's a faster athlete. Vaccaro was used as a blitzer as well in New Orleans. He's a better athlete with a more multidimensional skill set. And, you know, I think that every coach would prefer that kind of player.
Then it seems like one of the questions is can he hold up? Because obviously he's not afraid to nose in there and and has suffered some stuff last year. Even Vrabel said there were times last year on film where he did not look like the guy he looked like during the workout that they had the other day with him based on him playing through what was
you
it?
Mean he looked
groin
better
injury
or worse like in the workout?
Looked good in the workout as compared to film last year when he was, I guess, dealing with the groin.
Right, right. The other thing that's going to be really interesting, PK, here, in my view, is clearly Mike Vrabel. You know, don't forget, both those guys have a New England background, so maybe this isn't as big a deal, but some of the things Dean Pease has done since he's been in Baltimore were different than what Mike Vrabel and Romeo Crennel did in Houston. So I'm anxious to see how they mix and match. Now, you can mix and match a lot of different things as long as your players can handle it on Sunday afternoon. They can all handle it on the blackboard, and they can handle it in walkthroughs. The question is, can they handle it on Sunday afternoon? So we'll see. But obviously, there is some common background because they both have a New England background.
The big story heading into Hard Knocks last night, we're with our weekly visit with Greg Cosell of NFL Films, the excellent analyst. Corey Coleman traded for a 2020 seventh-round pick. And then there was some hesitation as to whether he wanted to continue to play past his physical in Buffalo, which made it a done deal. What exactly are the Browns giving up on with some uncertainty there in their own receiving core with Josh Gordon not around? And might the Bills stumble into something here as a reclamation project who was a high pick?
He was a high pick because of his speed. The problem you get with Baylor receivers, and each one's different, it's a case-by-case basis, but the nature of that offense under Art Briles was that receivers didn't learn a lot about the receiver position, and they weren't asked to do very much. You can watch Baylor tape when Briles was there, and if the play was designed to go to the right, let's say, the two receivers on the left didn't even move off the line of scrimmage. They just stood there. So receivers have a lot to learn when they come out of that particular system. Obviously, Art Briles isn't there anymore. So Corey Coleman was drafted because of his speed and sheer explosiveness. Now, he's starting fresh. I guess there's a question as to his commitment to play the game. Let's assume it's there. Now you're still working to teach him how to play the position within the context of your offense, and you probably give him just a couple of things to do and hope that his sheer speed and explosiveness at least presents a weapon for you and at least stresses the defense.
Greg, the Patriots, you know, outside of Randy Moss, have not been stacked at wide receiver at any time for Tom Brady. I think you could argue they traded for Brandon Cooks last year. They got rid of him. They've just dumped Jordan Matthews and Mitchell, two hurt guys. They added Eric Decker, who was, you know, ineffective more often than he was effective, perhaps, here in Tennessee. Yet none of us expect anything is going to change. So outside of the consistency of Tom Brady, how does that system function in a way where it almost doesn't matter who's playing wide receiver?
Yeah, it's really fascinating, especially for an offense that relies, Paul, so much on option routes, choice routes, where the receiver and Tom Brady have to see things the same way. So it usually takes a little bit of time. Now, because Tom Brady is so good before the snap of the ball, and he can get the right play called, it's sometimes that can be alleviated, but still, it does take a little time with all the option and choice routes that they run. I thought last year with Cooks, they actually threw the ball down the field a little more than maybe they had since Randy Moss, who might have been the best deep ball receiver we've seen in a long time. But we'll see if they go back to playing a little more of a quick game, the three-step drop game, the five-step drop game, relying on Brady to move the chains, sustain offense that way. And I think James White's a critical piece of what they do offensively, the back who's really there as a receiver.
What do you expect of Eric Decker there?
You know, it's almost hard to know, Paul, because, you know, Decker, when you look at Decker and what he's done the last 2 years, you probably feel like he's on the downside of his career. And in any other situation, you might say he's almost brought in just as a compete player. But then when you get to New England, obviously he's a smart guy. He's been around a long time, knows how to run routes, understands defenses. Maybe he fits perfectly there. I have almost no sense of exactly how he may or may not turn out there.
To what degree does Ndamukong Suh give the Rams Aaron Donald insurance? We know if the two of them are out there, it's awfully intimidating. And we know that Donald is one of the very best defensive players in the league. How much can they offset his absence if it's protracted because they now have Suh?
Well, Sue's not the pass rusher Donald is. Sue's a different kind of player. Donald is an explosive mover, a twitchy guy for his size. Sue is methodically powerful. He's not necessarily a twitchy, penetrating player. He's not slow by any means, but he's not Donald at all. So what they're ultimately missing, the Rams, particularly when you get into their sub packages and you need pass rush, is they'd be missing that guy from the inside who has that kind of pass rush ability. Sue's not quite that guy.
This one's less filmy and more moody, which we sometimes get into with the Eagles, since you're nearby. Seems like the indications are that Carson Wentz isn't going to see game action until opening day. Just how's the tone in Philly in terms of the patience with him coming back and, having Foles run things until he's ready? And from the bit that they've put him on display, what's the buzz about how he looks recovery-wise?
I think that it's been pretty positive. I think they feel he'll be ready to go week one. I think the bigger story, to be honest with you, is how they feel about Nate Sudfeld, who was their number three last year, and he has created a lot of buzz, and it makes you wonder what happens to Nick Foles once Wentz is out there and clearly showing that he can play and line up. Because you know how it goes, PK. Sometimes a team, maybe they lose a quarterback in the preseason. Maybe somebody jumps up and offers the Eagles a number one pick for Nick Foles. But the way Nate Sudfeld has looked through training camp, and I'm anxious to see him in the preseason, but there's a lot of talk that he's the guy that could end up being their number two quarterback.
Wow, that's a surprise that it could be this year. I wonder if Foles has trade value. I would think they set themselves up nicely for next year when Foles is...
Well,
a free agent.
the thing is right, Foles becomes a free agent, and if they feel really good about Sudfeld, then they might like to get something for Foles as opposed to next year he'll walk.
We're going to see the Bucs up close next week. They're practicing here for 2 days before playing the Titans. We know they've done a lot of work on their pass rush. Noah Spence is up 35 pounds from 228 to 263. You think he can carry that well, and how much of a difference might it make for them up front?
I hope, PK, you haven't been following the Spence diet.
Yeah, well, not quite, but I'm put on 35, but I certainly am not going the right direction.
Well, you know, when he was drafted, obviously we all remember him going to Ohio State as a big-time recruit and as a big-time prospect. Didn't work out there. He ended up down in Kentucky. And he's got pass rush skill. The question is, and none of us know this till we really see him, is what will happen to his explosiveness and twitchiness with that weight? Tough to know that. Obviously, they also signed Vinnie Curry, who I'm sure they expect to give them some pass rush as well. So they've really tried to upgrade their front four. Under Mike Smith, they're a predominant four-man rush defense. They're a predominant zone defense on the back end and a four-man rush defense. So they need the D-line to rush the quarterback, or they can't play.
Greg Cosell from NFL Films is our guest here on the Midday 180. Greg, the storyline for half of the AFC South, quarterbacks coming back from injury. If I'm looking for the Greg Cosell guide to watching preseason football, even if it's only for a series in this first game, what are you going to be watching with both Andrew Luck and Deshaun Watson? Is there something specific you want to see from them coming back from injury?
You know, that's a hard question, only because you know, they will be out there. You know, I doubt Lux, you know, they wouldn't put these guys out there if they couldn't play. It's not like Watson's going to be out there limping around. You know, and it's not like Lux's going to throw the ball and grab his shoulder. So, you know, and you know offensively, well, certainly in Indianapolis, you might see a few things offensively just because there's a new coach and a new system. So you'll get a glimpse of some things they want to do. I think the bigger question there is the wide receiver position. I think Luck, when all said and done, will be fine. I think with Deshaun Watson, we saw a major glimpse last year in the five or six starts of how they'll play offense. And they have a big opener against New England, and they want him to be ready, obviously. But I think you're going to see an offense with a lot of shotgun, and I think you'll see an offense where they want him to get out of the pocket by design. And I think Deshaun Watson, knowing the kind of kid he is, he'll be fine.
You know, I don't know if there's going to be a big takeaway from any of these first preseason games, but we know Titans fans are going to watch the preseason games, and they're going to watch them play the Packers tomorrow night. Offensively, with Matt LaFleur's offense, with both Corey Davis and Rishard Matthews missing time, can you really take much away from anything they're going to try to do in the passing game, being as vanilla as they're going to be? But without those two main contributors there, what is there to watch offensively that you would be looking for in this game for the Titans?
You know, I think in these first preseason games, which are still along the lines of glorified scrimmages,
right,
I think you're just looking for the execution of basic concepts. And that's why I struggle so much with these definitive, bold statements about preseason games. Sure, would you rather players execute well as opposed to not? Of course you would. But I think it's really difficult. I mean, look what happened last week. On Friday, I can't tell you how many things I read where Lamar Jackson's whole career has already been defined. He doesn't need to do anything else. We know what he is. You know, it gets a little silly. So coaches are just looking right now for execution of the basic concepts that they've been teaching since OTAs, especially when it's a new coach.
What DeForest Buckner's another inside rusher in San Francisco, inside that they're looking to move to end, or at least play at both.
Right.
What do you think of that move, and what's San Francisco looking like up front?
Well, I think it's the Calais Campbell deal. Calais Campbell last year, and you guys are aware of this because Jacksonville's in your division, in their base 4-3, he would be a D-end. He'd be an inside pass rusher in their when they went to their sub-packages. So I think they could see him in San Francisco, DeForest Buckner. He has that kind of size. He has that kind of athletic movement. They could see him being a D-end in certain packages. And, you know, more than likely, you know, more than likely he'd be a D end, I would think, in a base package, because I think when you put him inside in a sub and let him rush the quarterback against guards and potentially centers, I think you've got the size advantage and the athletic advantage. So I could see that working for sure. I think DeForest Buckner has a chance, if his health's okay, to be a breakout player this year. He's a talented guy.